Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is episode 93, Storytelling for Thought Leadership with Andrea Sampson. Crafting impactful narratives, how storytelling elevates influence, engagement, and thought leadership success. What this episode will do for you is learn about Andrea's journey to thought leadership, transitioning from advertising and strategy to coaching TEDx speakers and thought leaders in crafting compelling narratives. Learn about the power of storytelling in thought leadership in making complex ideas more accessible, memorable, and impactful for diverse audiences. Learn how to distill complex ideas into a core message by understanding Andrea's process for helping experts refine their message into a clear, engaging, and influential narrative. Engage audiences with emotional connection by learning how to structure messages that resonate deeply and inspire action. And learn three essential storytelling strategies, insights on crafting and delivering thought leadership messages with clarity and impact. But before we dive into this episode further, let me share the purpose behind Thought Leadership Studio, especially if you're new here. I'm Chris McNeil, developer of The Thought Process of Strategic Thought Leadership and author of the upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership, set to release in May 2025. This podcast and the book are designed to challenge conventional thinking about marketing and influence, offering a deeper exploration of ideas that can empower you to create breakthroughs in your own marketing and leadership journey. Strategic thought leadership doesn't lend itself to an elevator pitch because it challenges the dominant marketing model. It shifts the focus from treating prospects as targets to listening deeply to their learning needs and creating empowering content that helps them make better decisions and derive greater value. And also leads them to revere the unique attributes of your offering. And that's why I created this podcast, to offer a space for exploring these transformative ideas and to help you self-select into the opportunities that resonate most with your goals. And a key part of this learning process is providing models of excellence, which is why I interview remarkable individuals who excel in areas relevant to strategic thought leadership. Their stories and strategies serve as powerful examples, offering practical insights you can adapt to elevate your own influence and impact. And if today's episode sparks something in you, if you sense the potential for greater clarity, purpose, or success, I invite you to schedule a free consultation with me. It's an opportunity to explore how strategic thought leadership can amplify your results. You can visit the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com, linked in the description, to access resources like my free ebook, Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, and additional content designed to support your growth. In this episode, I am excited to introduce Andrea Sampson, co-founder of Talk Boutique and a renowned speakers coach who has spent over 25 years helping leaders, TEDx speakers, and experts refine their message and craft narratives that resonate. With a background in advertising and strategy, she transitioned into coaching thought leaders to distill their complex insights into clear, engaging, and transformative messages. It's all about effective storytelling, making this episode especially relevant to strategic thought leadership, which includes making complex ideas accessible inspiring change, and shaping the future with impactful communication. Storytelling is the bridge between expertise and influence. It makes ideas memorable, relatable, and actionable. In this fascinating conversation, Andrea shares her journey from advertising to thought leadership coaching, emphasizing the importance of making your voice heard, the role of inclusivity in shaping the future, and the process of distilling deep knowledge into a compelling core message. We discuss the challenges experts face in communicating their ideas and the power of storytelling in overcoming those barriers. Andrea also provides actionable insights on how thought leaders can structure their message, engage audiences emotionally, and create lasting impact through storytelling. So without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
I am your host of Thought Leadership Studio, Chris McNeil, and I am sitting across Zoom with Andrea Sampson, a transformative force in storytelling and co-founder of Talk Boutique. So how can storytelling drive meaningful change in business of all sizes? Well, Andrea's expertise lies in guiding TEDx speakers and business leaders to craft impactful narratives that enhance communication and inspire growth. Her work has empowered leaders across diverse industries to harness the power of storytelling as a strategic tool for transformation. Great to have you here.
Well, thanks so much, Chris. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And to give our listener who may not yet be familiar with your work a little context, was there a pivotal moment or an event or a shift in thinking that sets you on the path to doing what you're doing now with this type of work and coaching and transformative storytelling?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely there was. You know, I spent most of my career in advertising. I was worked in strategy and planning, and I had gone into advertising early on in my career with, you know, sort of an idealist mindset, thinking that, you know, in some way, using this powerful medium of advertising, I could influence some of the policies or, you know, sort of the ways in which society sees things. So, you know, because advertising is a powerful medium. And after about 25 years of working in the medium, I realized, you know, I was an idealist in a capitalist world. And you know, it is absolutely a medium that is driving capitalist consumption. And nothing wrong with that, but it wasn't helping me in terms of making impact. And I decided I needed to leave the industry, but I didn't know what I was going to do. And so I started doing just a little bit of sort of exploring. And I was still working in advertising. At the time, I was a senior vice president of strategy for a very large agency. And I started going to conferences and sort of just doing some personal development work. And one of the things that I ended up doing was being volunteered by TEDx Toronto as a speaker's coach. And at the time, this was in the early days of the TEDx movement. And I didn't know what a speaker's coach was. I had never heard of it. But I mean, given the work that I was doing, I presented all day, every day and thought, oh, yeah, I got this. But that was a moment for me. That first year, I ended up working with TEDx Toronto for 5 years, then went on to work with, created my own TEDx brand. And I've worked with TEDx speakers all over the world now, and even worked with some TED speakers. And, you know, what it did for me in going into that world was I saw something that I didn't realize. So first of all, you know, when you work with people who are TED speakers, they're often scientists or academics or technologists or even artists. That's sort of what is the profile of a TED speaker. And these are people who are often doing big work in the world. They are doing work to change our world. But they're so busy doing the work that they're forgetting to tell anyone about it. And you know why that's important is that the work they're doing is actually shaping your and my futures. And we're never learning about it because the media isn't all that interested in telling us about the good work that's happening. It's often more interested in telling us about what isn't happening
Yes.
or what's going wrong. And so that was the first discovery I had. The second was that everything I had been doing in advertising had been the perfect training ground for me as a speaker's coach and as a thought leader coach. Because one of the things that I had to do in advertising as a strategist and planner was to be able to distill information down into a single idea. And that is the exact skill that these scientists and academics and technologists and thought leaders needed, was to help them take their entire life's work and turn it into one idea that could be then built into a 15-minute TED talk. And so these two things sort of happened at the same moment, and I realized, that this was the work that I actually really wanted to do, because this is how I can actually create change and impact in our world.
And is it this creating change and impact? Is that what you do this for? Is that your drive?
So my why is really about co-creating a future that's representative of all who are living within it. And what that means is that, today when we look out at the world, at the thought leaders who are actually creating the future for us, often those thought leaders don't look like me. They are, and don't look like many of the people who are going to be living in those futures. And so what happens is our voices are not being represented. And thought leaders, the challenge I think that most people have is that they go, well, how do I become a thought leader? That's a hard thing. Except that's not really true anymore. It might have been once that was true. But the
Sure.
reality is, thought leadership is really about making your voice, your point of view heard. If you've got some sort of a background or training that is enabling you to see the world in a different way, you have the ability to help others to see a different way of being. And by doing that, you're creating thought leadership. Now, it might be in your family, or it might be in your neighborhood, or it might be in your community, or maybe it's in your industry or country. Your reach is not as important as your voice, because if your voice is being heard, the reach will find its place and it'll inspire others. So for me, I do what I do so that I could create a diversity of thought leadership, because that is what co-creates a future that is inclusive of everyone, which creates sustainability for us all.
I love the principles of inclusivity and including people, and that thought leadership isn't necessarily what some think it is. I've run into the same thing where many think it's about just demonstrating expertise or the size of your social media audience. And I've always said if you can change one person's thinking, because our experience of the world is our thinking, then you've changed the world for that person. And you're doing thought leadership for that person.
That's it. And I think that that is the piece that's for so many of us, we have to sort of come and step into, because when we are using our voice and influencing that one person, we're actually influencing hundreds, maybe thousands. And that's what we don't really understand. And like I said, I think inclusivity is such an important thing in our world today, because we are a world of such vast diversity. And that's everything from diversity of culture or gender, but it's also diversity of thinking and even the way in which we think, neurodivergent thinking. I mean, we're learning how different we are while how similar we are. This is, I guess, the one of the benefits of being human. We can be of the same species, but so very diverse in how we approach the things we do and how we think.
And that's a strength.
That is a strength.
And somehow we miss it. And I think I love the distinction you made between the mainstream media negativity, because you're going to get more clicks with a negative message. So it leans in that direction. And I would even point to the small number of companies and on the large number of mainstream media companies limiting diversity of message. And it becomes about the agenda of the stockholders.
Exactly.
in the more independent media that where we can build our own platforms as thought leaders. And something that really intrigued me was your work with people who are experts in a particular field, but may not know how to package their expertise for influence. I mean, what if you have the world's greatest innovation, but nobody buys into it because you haven't led anybody to appreciate the benefits of that innovation and contextualize it into their lives? How do you help people do that? What are the beginning steps of someone who might have deep knowledge, but maybe not be so skilled in articulating that knowledge for empowerment?
Well, the first thing is to create what I call their core thought leadership, their core idea. And it is a complex and nuanced process, but really it is what we're doing is we're developing a one sentence of what it is that they're putting out in the world. And it's really through the lens of what topic or category within which they operate. So where is your expertise? Are you in science, and what type of science? Are you in medicine? What type of medicine? So categorically, what is it you're addressing? And then we look at, okay, now within that, what is it you're contributing to that category or topic? What is it that's unique that only you do, that you think, that you believe, that you've proven? And there are many different ways that activation of that topic can come about, but that's where it becomes unique, because we take the more ubiquitous topic, but we narrow it down to how that individual is addressing that topic. Now, those two things are usually a big part of that core thought leadership, and for the thought leader, they'll often feel very complete. But we have to add in the reason why they're doing it, the why, which often feels really obvious, because when you hear sort of that work, and especially when the person who's doing that work hears it, it's like, yes, that's exactly it, and it's obvious why I'm doing it. Except it's your audience who needs to hear the why, and so we bring the why in it. What's the impact or outcome when your topic and the way in which you activate or address that topic are true? What comes from it? What is the thing that changes, or the outcome, or the result that you're putting out into the world? And so, putting those three things together, we come up with core thought leadership. And what that usually does for somebody who's struggled to make themselves heard or understood is it gives them a foundation. What we're not trying to do is to develop a tagline or a marketing speak. What we're doing is we're developing a foundational platform upon which all of the marketing and stories and everything can live on top of. So often when we develop that core thought leadership, it feels very right, but it often needs more pizzazz, as we hear. I hear that a lot. Oh, it's
Sure.
boring. Well, sure, it's boring because it's literal, because we want it to be literal, because we don't, what we want for the speaker, the thought leader, is to really very specifically capture what they're doing, how they are contributing. And we don't want to leave that up to nuance or to metaphor, where it can be misunderstood or interpreted in different ways by different people. So we ideally first paint that picture very literally, and then we can turn it into lots of metaphors, bring story in, create a way for people to access it that is more engaging and meaningful for others. But we have to first start with what is true for the thought leader. And so that process is always where we start with the thought leader. And once we have that, then we start looking out and saying, all right, now, how do you want to get that message out? Who's your target audience for that message? And now let's start to build out stories and messages so that others understand it, engage with it, and want to support you in some way in it.
That's powerful. And I'm getting a few threads that might be worth diving deeper into. One of them is the empathy for the audience perspective. And we're not always good as entrepreneurs or leaders or founders or inventors or scientists or musicians, artists, and stepping out of our creative process and seeing it from the outside in. in how it looks.
And
there's unique thinking as part of that, contrasting that with the thinking we're leading people from. So we're starting from where they're at. That's one piece. Another is, in my language, I would differentiate it in terms of a thought leadership position, which is a very simple statement, more like your core message, an if-then statement. So it's in the structure of a belief system versus a thought leadership model, all the things you wrap it in to make it attractive and lead people to it. So,
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting way. I've never really like thought of it as an if-then versus a model, but I can see where you're going with that. It's powerful. I mean, because of the way that we do it and the way that I look at it, I'm really trying to get at that sort of, you know, what is it you do? How do you do it? And why is it important? Like that's sort of my... The framework of the model that I use in terms of the idea itself. And then we get into the making accessible through stories. And so what that does with the audience, so getting into, okay, who is it that we're really talking to? And how can we, you know, the thing about, regardless of how you sort of come to that core thought leadership, it is somebody's life's work. It's their belief set, right? And it's layered and it's deep and it's very tightly packed because it has to be. And so what we want to do is be able to unpack it in a way that's understandable by people who aren't as close to it and who don't have an understanding of it. But if they did, they would actually think and behave differently. And so that's what we're really doing. And so the unpacking of it is so important for that audience.
How do you lead these leaders to unpack things? What kinds of questions do you ask, or what kinds of information do you draw out of them to build this out this way?
So we'll usually start with why they believe what they believe. Like, what is it you believe? What is it? What is it you do, first of all? Like, for me, I always start with, tell me about yourself, because in regardless of what you do for a living, who we are at our core always is what drives us. And so I start with the human. Who are you? What makes you you? What do you believe? And then within that, now, what is it that you have chosen to dedicate your life to in whatever way that means? And so now we're starting to get into the translation of the human to the ways in which they're contributing. And so by unpacking both of those things, it allows me as the, you know, sort of the receiver of that information to start to build up some models for them to be able to say it back to them. So I'm saying, well, you know, what you've told me about you is this, and the thing you do is that. So for me, as I listen to that, here's what I'm hearing. Tell me, does that make sense to you? And so now what we're doing is almost a call and response of you tell me something, I tell it back to you, mirror it back to you in a way that maybe you've not heard before. Sometimes it's your own words, because in fact, I do that a lot. And I do that very specifically because what I find is that we don't listen to ourselves. And so we're saying things, and yet we, because our brain, you know, those beautiful brains that we have, fills in so much for us. So the words we use are usually very layered with lots of information that's already in our brain. But what the receiver, me, is hearing is the words without the benefit of everything that's in the teller's brain. And so when I say it back to them and they hear only their words, not all the meaning that was in their head, they'll often say things to me like, no, no, that's not what I meant at all. Except I might even be using the exact words they're using. But it's because their brain can no longer fill in the blanks because it's coming from somebody else. It's not coming from them, even though it was their words. So that kind of a call and response is a really important part. And the questioning of why do you believe what you believe? What is your background? What's your history? What brought you to this? And then we get into the, what is it that you do that no one else does in that category, in that area? Or what is it you believe? Or what change do you want to see that no one else really knows about? Because of your culture or your background or your history or your training or your experience or your experiments. Like, we all bring things very uniquely to our areas of expertise, but we don't always appreciate how unique they are because we, again, are seeing through our own biased lens. But as I ask some of those questions, I'm able to start to parse them apart, pull them apart, and go, oh, well, you told me this and this, and it means this. Have you ever thought about it that way? And now that person is thinking about it, and they're realizing how uniquely they do approach something that they thought everybody knew. And I think, again, this is the filter we put on ourselves, you know, as humans, because we like to think that we're just like everyone else, when in fact, each and every one of us brings a unique lens.
I love that. And to me, it's like you're acting like the advocate of the audience member, the advocate of
Yes.
the crowd who could benefit from this to help them extract value from
Yeah.
this core message that needs a lot of context to be appealing, attractive, magnetic, and relatable.
Yeah,
And
that's exactly it.
maybe teach people how this is relevant to your values. Maybe the way you looked at this field or profession or form of art before wasn't fulfilling this value that's important to you. And here's a perspective that could, if you just want to take a little time to engage in this new world of thinking.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I mean, the advocate for the audience, when I worked in the agency world, because I was a planner and a strategist, my role was to be the consumer inside of the agency. That was, you know, I played that role with our creative teams and even with our clients, right? That was my role of always kind of having the consumer viewpoint, so that trying to kind of get through the biases that happen when you're working very deeply on you know, creative campaigns. And so always keeping that consumer orientation in mind. And it's the same with, you know, an audience. Like, it's one of the things that we talk a lot about when we're working with thought leaders, because they get very caught up in the message or the idea of it being right. And, you know, what I often, you know, will say is, like, it's not about you, it's about your audience. Right. And
Absolutely.
so we have to let go of this idea of it being right, because that idea of right is only right within our own minds, because it's through our filters. It's through, like, what we really have to go is it understandable?
Yes.
Is what you're saying, you know, accessible by the audience? So if you're an expert in nanotechnology, let's just say, and you're now, you know, helping all of us to understand the power and the impact of this, you know, very advanced technology, and you're choosing to do that by giving us the technological makeup of the work that you're doing. Now, that might be right. You might be 100% right with that.
Sure.
But your audience is never going to understand it. So I'm not suggesting that you say something that's fictional. But what we do is we go, all right, so what is it your audience absolutely has to know about this? Do they need to know how it was built? They actually don't. Even though, yes, you're right in that, 100% you are. What they really need to know is that the impact of it is this. And yes, they need to know that it's evidence-backed, but you don't need to tell them about the 12 studies that were done in order to get there. You can simply say, you know, through research and you know, testing, here's where we've ended up. Now, is there a way for the audience to discover what that research and testing is? Sure, there's lots of things we can do to make sure that that's the case. But do you need to have to put that into everything you're doing? And so, again, this is where you know your audience, because often, again, we do work with a lot of scientists and academics and technologists, and what they're often wanting, because they're often presenting to their own peers. And the belief is, well, if I don't have proof, well, then I'm going to be called out scientifically. And there is some truth in that, totally. But the reality is, even when you're presenting in front of your peers, what you know is different from what they know.
Well, sure. And there's all kinds of arguments between scientists until they reach consensus. And then 30 years later,
Right.
the mystic would say all truth is relative truth, except the truth that can't be spoken anyways. But is it moving us forward? Is it
That's
releasing
it.
us?
And you know, the rest of the world needs to know about this stuff, not just your peers. And so when you step out, because this is the thing, when you step into thought leadership, you're no longer presenting to your peers. You're actually presenting beyond them. And so you cannot, and I think this is, you know, I always love the, you know, the concept of what got you here will not get you there. And so as a you know, as an expert who has presented in front of your peers for many, many years, the way in which you speak and present and argue your points with your peers will not get you to a widely recognized thought leadership platform, because that is not what is needed outside of that group. What we need is understanding and engagement with the ideas that you're bringing forward. And that's where storytelling comes in, because for me, this is where, and this is the thing that I think for most thought leaders is it's the piece that takes them into thought leadership, but it's the scariest step to do that, because they have to take that leap from, I'm going to empirically prove what I'm telling you, to, I'm going to tell you a story about how I got here. And that storytelling piece is more terrifying than the research that they do to get that information.
But also so much more powerful for impacting large numbers of people. What makes good storytelling in your model?
So good storytelling, you know, it's storytelling is one of those things that so few of us have actually ever been trained to do. We all, as humans, naturally tell stories. And sometimes we tell really good stories, and sometimes we tell stories that are like, that's just okay. Why? Well, it's because stories, when you take stories down to their core, how do you build a story that's engaging? And how do you do that in a short period of time so you don't lose your audience with a, where are you taking me on? You know, what journey are you taking me on? Right. So we always have the constraint of information, knowledge, entertainment, and time, right? So how do we get through all of that? Well, the answer is really simple. The answer is about engaging your audience emotionally while you're delivering an intellectual idea. That sounds really big and heady, but it's actually pretty simple, because what you do is you appeal to their senses. Emotional, like you, the emotions live in our sensory inputs as humans. So touch, sight, sound, taste, you know, like these are the things that engage our brain emotionally. So if you're telling a story, don't just tell me you were walking down the street the other day and this thing happened. Tell me, where were you? I was in New Orleans. It was in November, and it was a sunny day. It was warm, but not overwhelmingly warm. I could hear music all around me. You know, the New Orleans streets are always filled with jazz music and the smells of incredible food wafting from every restaurant around me. And as I'm walking down that street, now you're there with me, right? You can imagine it, even if you've never been to New Orleans, you can imagine this, you know, street that's full of color, that smells and sounds, right? Because I've given you something to emotionally engage you. Now, whatever the thing that's happened, and whoever is with me, I can build that in, and I can keep that emotional engagement going. But what I'm doing when I'm doing this type of storytelling, and the way that I use storytelling, is to hold an idea. So I'm not just giving you a story for the sake of giving you a story. I'm giving you a story that's going to act as a metaphor for what I want you to remember. So I'm very specifically using sensory inputs to engage your brain. I'm using story to keep your brain interested, because our brains are both associative and predictive. So the associations are those triggers, those sensory triggers. The predictive nature is, where am I going with this? So your brain is always trying to figure out one step ahead of what's happen going to happen next. So as I'm doing that, I'm building out a story, but I know that I've got an idea that I want you to know. So I know the destination of my story is not the conclusion of the story, but in fact, the idea I'm leading you to. So I'm building all the elements of the story to lead you to that idea. Now, it's a story, so there will be a conclusion. But I'm not going to deliver that conclusion until I have really unpacked the idea that I want you to remember and live within that story. So I'm going to deliver that idea at a tension point in the story where I've got you very engaged. And I might say something like, I tell you this because, and now I'm going to deliver my idea. And then I go, you see, what I learned on that day in the streets in New Orleans was this. And it led me to understand something that I didn't know I needed to understand, which is now my idea, right? And then I'll go on to maybe break that idea down because it's tightly packed with lots of information, as we've discussed. And I might give you more of that idea through the lens of the story until I'm ready now to conclude it. And then I'll go back and go, oh, I never told you what happened that day on the street in New Orleans. And now I conclude it, which allows me to remind you, because then I go, because you know what? It really was the impetus for me for whatever this idea was. And then I end on a call to action. And I can reinforce for you now that idea and what I want you to take away from it. So storytelling for me is a way to deliver an idea, to make it memorable, to make it understandable, and to engage your audience all the way along.
And it makes perfect sense involving all the senses that you can in that. And that's one of the things I found studying strategies of people who are really just highly creative people, like Mozart. He would compose with turning instruments in his imagination into food and a meal and arrange a meal.
Oh, so
it's
interesting.
Tasteful.
I didn't know that.
So it's actually tasteful music.
Right.
And then he would imagine that this meal plus music gestalt turned into a sculpture, like an abstract 3D sculpture, is how he could compose an entire symphony before he wrote the first note down in his imagination. And it just seems like our brains, I mean, how do we understand things? Through symbol systems like language, but really through the senses, from which these symbol systems are in part. But so many people I've seen try to describe thought leadership concepts in the abstract. And
we don't understand. Well, again, this is where we get into language barriers, because as soon as we get into abstractions, those, what that means to you is different than what it means to me.
Yes.
And so we get misunderstandings. That's why story is so powerful, because, you know, I always like to say, you know, we all live the same life. It's just the details that are different, right? So like we all have a childhood. We all have to some degree parents or siblings and friends. And like we all have these lives that have a lot of similar elements, but each of us live very unique details. And so when I start telling you a story about whatever it is that I'm telling you about, the likelihood is you've had an experience similar. And one of the things we know about, I mean, there's a lot of brain science behind storytelling. And one of the things we know is that as soon as we start a story, our brain gets engaged. Like I said, there's an association and a prediction happening. But what also is happening is our brains start to bring up our own memories and populate the story we're listening to with our own memories. So what happens is the story starts to trigger in us memories and feelings, right? So our body starts going through, and actually me as the storyteller and you as the listener, our brains start to line up. We start to actually mirror each other, our brain signals, and they've done these studies, our brains actually align. And we start getting hit with dopamine and serotonin and all of these brain chemicals, a cocktail of brain chemicals that make us feel good.
Yes.
And so when we're using story, we're removing that abstraction nature, as you talked about, where there's a lot of misunderstanding. We're creating associations that allow us to feel and get a cocktail of brain chemicals. What we're also doing is building that alignment between us where it's like, oh, wait a minute, you get me. You know, you understand me because you've lived a similar life. Well, we've all lived similar lives. And when we find these moments within where we can actually pull a little window, suddenly our audience feels like we're just like them. We're not something outside of them. We're just like them. And they remember those stories because they've been triggered. They've triggered their own stories. So it's powerful to have storytelling in any sort of communication.
All right. I can't get Louis Armstrong and Shrimp Creole out of my mind now. So how do we wrap our concepts within stories? Is it through metaphor or through creating a setting where we lead people to an event that led us to a discovery or an insight that we now want to share? Or could it be either? Or what are some ways to wrap the story around the concept that we're trying to convey?
So when you look at the concept you're trying to convey, any idea is usually going to have inside of it some mechanism. Is it a transformation? Is it a revelation? Like, what is the idea that you have? I mean, you kind of like, so just kind of abstract, take your idea and just take a moment, take a step back from it and go, what is it really that you want the audience to take away from that idea, right? And then once you've got that, then you go, okay, so now when in my life, or when in my experience, or what story do I know about that actually conveys that? And how do I feel about that story? So first of all, you need to establish what it is, what is the concept that you want your audience to take away, conceptually. So you've got an idea, but now what's the concept within that idea? Then you go, what story could hold it? Okay. Because that's really important. You're going to be in alignment. The story can't be, you can't be telling a story of loss when your idea is all about hope, unless that loss has hope inside of it, right? So you have to create an alignment between the abstraction of the idea and the story you're going to tell. And then you very specifically build the story to lead to that idea. Now we do this, we actually have something called the Storytelling Toolkit, which I'm happy to make available to your listeners.
Oh yeah, love that.
And within that, we have sort of three frameworks that we use that does exactly this. So there's the idea framework for building out that idea. Then there's the story spine, which is a tool to actually build the idea inside of a story. And then we have what we call the talk canvas, which is to take that story and idea and turn it into a presentation in whatever way, like a much larger. So your story would always open that presentation and then be used all the way through that presentation, much the way a TED talk has a story at the heart of it that actually goes through the entire talk. So the talk canvas I built out of my work on TED, and it is a framework for a TED talk, but it's also a framework for a corporate presentation. So if you want to do your corporate presentations in the TED style, it's a great tool. And the story spine and the idea framework live inside of the talk canvas. So we give you all three of them. And so what I love about the story spine, which is sort of the main storytelling component of that toolkit, is that it's just five steps to telling a story. And so it's really easy. It's the environment. Where is it taking place? The sense of place. Be in it. Be first person. Do the way that I just talked about New Orleans, right? Like it's we were in the moment. So what is that environment? Specificity matters. Then who are the characters? Who's with you? Characters have names. They're not like my friend. It's my friend, Jim, or whatever, right? So now. What's my fr you know so and maybe because characters always have a little bit of backstory, so we might give a one sentence, my friend Jim, who I've known for years but hadn't seen in ages, we got together for a walk down the street in New Orleans. So now you've got a little backstory on the characters. Then there's the issue, the conflict, or the opportunity. So that's the reason you're telling the story. Now, this is the mistake most storytellers make, is that they jump right into the issue, conflict, or opportunity, right? It's like the other day this thing happened. Don't do that. You've got to set it up. Give us that environment. Bring us in. Tell us who's there. Let us get a little bit engaged. Then kind of set up. What is that? What is the thing? Like, why are you telling me this story? Now, any good storyteller will tell you that it's not enough to just have that sort of what is the story about? There needs to be a tension point. What's that and then moment? So that's the fourth piece we call the raising of the stakes. So we've got environment, characters, issue, conflict, or opportunity, the reason you're telling the story, then raising of the stakes. Now, when you've got your audience in that point of a tension point in a story, of course, what happens when somebody says, and then, right? I go to the edge of our seat. Tell me more. What happened, right? Now that's the point that you deliver your idea. That's the point when you've got your audience at an emotional high, that's when you insert your idea. So you know where your idea is going to live in your story. You know what your idea is because you've decided that before you started telling that story. And now what you're doing, all those, everything you're telling the audience up until that point is what you're doing is you're leaving breadcrumbs to when you deliver the idea, they go, oh my God, I didn't even see that coming. Right. And so now they're like, and you've aligned it because you knew what your idea was and why you were telling this story. And then, like I said, depending on what the reason for you telling that story is, maybe it's a presentation or maybe it's just a story, you will, depending on if you want more, you'll delay the outcome of that story until you're ready to close the entire communication. So if you're just telling a story for the sake of telling a story, you might close it right away. But likely you're telling that story as a way for people to understand your idea. So you might choose to unpack the idea a little bit more before you go back and close that story.
That makes perfect sense. And the structure of it. And is it it's like I knew a contractor, and here in South Carolina, the waterfront property is real attractive, but then you're building on soft, marshy ground sometimes. And so, he was telling me about when he was out on a peninsula and he was checking out a house another contractor built that was leaning a little bit and was only a few years old. He said, well, we make sure we get those pilings pounded way, way deep into the earth. You won't see it when the finished product is there, but if you haven't spent the time building a structure behind it, the building's not going to stand up.
That's
Otherwise, you're just looking at
exactly.
paint on the outside. So
Yeah.
this has been fascinating. I think it's extremely relevant to anyone wanting to do what we call around here strategic thought leadership, intentionally leading people to new perspectives. And we usually wind these interviews up in two ways. First is knowing our audience, founders, entrepreneurs, marketers, people wanting to make a difference through positive influence. What are the three things that you would recommend they do that they could do right away to make a difference in that? And the second question is someone's listening to this thinking, wow, Andrea is really on with this. I would love to find out more about what she does. How would someone find you and your work?
So the first question was, how can they access this? Is that was
Three,
sort of.
three. Well, first question is three recommendations that you would make to make someone better at thought leadership.
So three recommendations. First recommendation, start using your voice more. Get used to hearing yourself. So that could be, start just doing videos on social media. Maybe you're just posting, like, even if it's just a minute long. Just get used to talking more. The more we say things out loud, the more we refine our thinking. And it's so important because it invites conversation in. So, number one, use your voice more. Number two, start telling stories. If you're going to use your voice anyway, tell some stories. Obviously, I recommend that you use the storytelling toolkit. It's powerful and it's easy. It gives you that framework to do that. But tell more stories. Get used to being a storyteller. Like if you're a person who goes, oh, I can't tell a story, stop telling yourself that story, right? And recognize that we are all innately storytellers. You just need to tell more of them. And third, look at why you do the things you do. Really spend some time thinking about the impact that you have on others, on the world, on your industry. Start really celebrating who you are and what you do. We tend to be so hard on ourselves and not recognizing the impact that we have. And yet, that is where our power lies, when we can recognize that we have contributed. I'm not saying that you have changed the world, but maybe you've changed the world for one person. Or maybe your idea has helped somebody else change the world. So celebrate who you are and what you do in this world, and really take the time to recognize that you are a thought leader. Maybe not the one who is running your country or running your company, but one who is putting something out there that's valuable, and that's important.
Love it. And then how will somebody find you and your work online?
So you can go to my YouTube channel. I do a lot of videos. That's at Talk Boutique. On YouTube, just look up Talk Boutique. We have our website. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter. We send out great stuff all the time. And you can follow me on LinkedIn. I'm very active there. So make sure you connect in with me.
Fantastic. And to the listener, I'm going to link to all this on the episode page. So if you're listening on an app, it'll be linked to in the episode description. It's
Yeah,
been
and
a pleasure.
we'll give you a link for the storytelling toolkit as well, so you can put it in the show notes.
Fantastic. Will do. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Chris. I've enjoyed this so much.
Likewise.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach and consultant, creator of the thought process of strategic thought leadership, and author of the upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership. And this has been episode 93, Storytelling for Thought Leadership with Andrea Sampson, Crafting Impactful Narratives, How Storytelling Elevates Influence, Engagement, and Thought Leadership Success, where we covered topics like From Advertising to Impact, A Journey in the Transformative Storytelling, A Future for Everyone, The Power of Inclusive Thought Leadership, Making Your Ideas Heard, Bridging the Gap, Translating Expertise for Greater Impact, and Becoming the Audience's Advocate, Thought Leadership with Impact. If you'd like to dive even deeper into today's topics and you're listening on an app, visit the episode page at thoughtleadershipstudio.com, which is linked in the episode description. You'll find a curated transcript linked to the resources mentioned, including Andrea's LinkedIn page and website, as well as actionable insights from this conversation. While you're there, don't forget to explore additional resources to elevate your influence and impact. Download the free guide, The Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, or schedule a free consultation with me so we can just sit down, hang out, and discover how the process of strategic thought leadership can help you lead with clarity and purpose, as well as elevating the effectiveness of all the marketing and leadership you do. And finally, if you enjoyed the episode, I'd like you to share it on your socials or with somebody specific who would enjoy the insights we discussed today. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review to help us create more of this kind of content for you. See you next time. I'm Chris McNeil on Thought Leadership Studio.
Thought Leadership Studio.